Fly down, rainbows in the sky, let's fly away. Like a bird, you're free to see the boundless face of the earth. Let the wind blow you. Hello everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of Destructo Discourse. This is a Dragon Ball Z rewatch podcast. I am your host, Tyler, and joining me for the discourse is Jason.
Hi.
Aaron.
Hi.
And Dave.
Hello.
Now, this is interesting. This is the same crew as last time. Well, this is perfect, because now we don't have to fucking explain anything about our Choose Your Own Adventure to somebody who would be very confused.
Oh my god.
We're all on the same page.
For those out there in podcast land just tuning in, to what are you referring?
Well, last week we started a Choose Your Own Adventure on fanfiction.net, starring us all playing the role of Madame Acorn Squash, a Saiyan on Earth, who does not know she's a Saiyan, apparently, because we all love D&D and role-playing, so I figured we could do it as a collaborative effort.
It's kind of a Goku situation, except we established pretty early on that she's a bad chick.
A very bad chick.
That's right! She's the baddest of the bad chicks.
So what say you guys to a thrilling conclusion?
I need it. My heart needs it. My mind needs it. My soul needs it.
Do you remember where we left off?
Not a clue.
We were flying around.
Were we about to fight Vegeta?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
we were
nice.
Flying around making fun of Vegeta for how small he was and about to fight him.
Parallel is probably like super good, so I don't know. We might be in for some trouble.
Yeah, I don't know how much training Madame Acorn Squash has been doing as a leader of a mall robbing organization.
A mall gang.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we have established that Saiyans have no defense against knives, against edge weapons, so...
Cutting implements.
Yeah.
She's actually sitting in a pretty good spot right now.
I'm gonna say no bet.
She knows her own weakness and uses it.
Yes.
What she fears most. She's like Batman.
I will become what I fear most.
Knives.
She just has a costume that's just all knives.
Hey guys, not to get off track right away, but what if Batman was most afraid of knives?
Well, we already know what that would be like. It was the antagonist of an arc of Dr. McNinja.
Oh, yeah.
The wizard that could cast spells on people that made them see everything was made of knives.
I feel like Bruce Wayne's life would have gone a lot differently if, as a child, he fell into a pit of knives.
I feel like it would have not gone.
This seems like a Chris Straub joke.
It does.
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway. Acorn Squash. You dive towards him as he leaps up at you, and you dodge as he shoots another energy ball toward you. Damn! His energy seems to grow with his anger. And right now, he seems very angry.
Oh no.
Do we like him when he's angry?
I mean, that's up to us. Personally, I do.
Yeah, I do.
Because he gets really shitty and bratty. Like so. Woman, hold still and let me hit you. The Dark Prince flew after failing again and again to hit you.
It's too fast for him.
Yeah, I'm just gonna stop and take it like a man, huh? Yeah, you flung a punch and it landed on his jaw, sending him straight down to the sand below. You zoom down and attempt to restrain him.
Wait, we're switching tenses.
We were in past tense,
but now we're in present tense again.
Well, we flung a punch, and now we zoom.
Time is relative.
Just ask Frieza.
Yeah. Why do you want to be my enemy? I don't want to hurt you. Well, I want to hurt you. He shoves you off.
Can't say fairer than that.
Yeah. He shoves you off of him and grabs your hair, pulling your head back.
Oh my.
You are very feisty for such a pretty person.
Oh.
Oh my god, he called us pretty, guys.
He pulls harder.
Has he met a Saiyan woman before? I feel like they're pretty feisty.
I'm not convinced that Saiyan women exist. Have we ever seen one?
Not yet.
Just you wait.
Okay.
Oh.
Oh boy.
If you were a true Saiyan, you would make a perfect mate.
Sorry.
I'm sorry.
If you were a true Saiyan, you would make a perfect mate.
Oh boy.
Oh, wow.
This moves Nate, quickly.
Yeah, then, and I just well, I thought about that choice of word for a second, and then I remembered that they turned into monkeys, and now I'm really sad.
I imagine the word mate to come out of the same mouth that I would imagine referring to women as females.
Yeah.
Completely unironically.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Agreed.
I started to wonder what kind of OkCupid user Vegeta would be in. I feel like I know.
And he says the word female.
Well, he says precisely what he just said.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You would be a perfect mate, if only.
Then his lips descend upon yours.
Oh my god.
Is this... Tyler.
Is this an what? Attack?
Is this horny? On main?
It's starting to look a little horny.
We have to abandon ship. We have to run.
I'm sorry, I'm losing my mind over the idea of somebody kissing a Saiyan and the Saiyan being like, wait, is this an attack? what kind of technique is this?
This is a mock beam. Close range.
Yeah.
Oh no!
It is an orange mouth grapple on Gordy's trading cards.
God damn.
I'm very upset.
It happens after you've been eating too many Cheetos.
Oh my god.
The mental image archetype of Saiyans as Reddit atheists is accruing steadily more in my mind that I'm really happy about it. Well, there's another fanfiction premise.
You gave it to yourself that time.
How much detail is there of the makeup scene?
His kiss was hard and unfeeling.
What?
Everything and nothing was going through your head all at once.
Wait. He
should have prepared a fanfiction bingo card.
He went in for the kiss, though. Vegeta. Mm-hmm. My dude. He went in for the kiss, and it's unfeeling?
Yeah.
How do we know that it's unfeeling?
Just really can't see the sparks in it, you know. Can't see the sparking miracle Zenkai.
Checking off the boxes, I guess.
I guess. He read a manual somewhere.
Picked up one of Bulma's magazines on Namek. She dropped it.
Regaining your sense for a moment, you reach out and grab his tail and squeeze.
Oh. This is definitely horny on me.
Oh my goodness.
We've only got one option again, which is pain.
Oh.
All right.
I'm sorry.
He releases you from his grasp and his demanding kiss. So it's unfeeling and demanding.
You were playing me both hot and cold, Vegeta.
With one kiss.
With only one. There's so much nuance.
He's a prince.
You slowly regain your senses as he howls in pain. Ah!
I thought he evolved past that.
Yeah.
I thought it was we
don't know when guess, this is, yeah, we, yeah, we don't know is, when this is set.
This is much before that.
Okay.
He seems to have so much energy. It's almost overwhelming, but you refuse to let go as he punches you and shoots a blast at your stomach, but you stand strong and refuse to move. Then he just seems to give in. The pain seems to be getting to him finally. He falls to his knees and slams his fist into the sand. Let me go!
This is a lot more in character than I was expecting.
He leaps up again, tossing sand into your eyes as you release him.
Tactical maneuver.
So, do we act quickly or blindly stand our ground?
Blindly stand our ground?
Wait, what is he doing?
Throwing sand in our face.
He pocket sands us. He sand attacks.
I think
us.
We just our close our eyes and stand our ground. This is not a hard one to deal with.
Blindly stand our ground?
Yeah, that's what I say.
Sure.
You stand your ground. He stands mere feet away from you, just looking at your tearing eyes and strong will.
Tearing eyes? Oh.
Because of the sand.
Yeah.
I guess we didn't close our eyes.
Ain't no sand gonna make me cry today.
I propose a compromise. He crosses his arms and looks sternly at you. What kind of compromise? You follow his lead and cross your own, letting your tail snap to show him you're ready to fight if need be. If you agree to come back to my ship and be mine, I will leave this. He looks around with disgust. Planet alone.
Planet?
Is the Maul's name like planet shopping? Can that be the mall we were just robbing?
We were robbing a Planet Hollywood.
Yes. And it has and it has a Pizza Planet inside it.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
We're taking all the funky road signs off of your walls.
Could this be real? The one person who looks like he could be your race, who's ruggedly handsome, wants you to be with him?
Handsome? Sure.
Ruggedly.
Rugged? He's a prince.
Rug-ed.
He's a clean-shaven, bratty boy.
Have you seen that fucking forehead? That's a rugged peak.
That is rugged. That is a mountain you must climb.
That wonderfully receding hairline.
You gotta summit his hair.
Goodness gracious.
Agree or disagree?
Let's weigh our options.
Well, it's objectively the wrong decision, but as a GM, mm-hmm. I hate it when players just to try to not participate in the plot. So let's say yes. So
we agree?
We want to say yes to the dress?
Say yes, yeah.
Say yes to the mess. I can fix him. He's a project.
Oh, no.
Oh, boy.
Oh, no.
We'll get him some nice clothes.
That's not too real, Jason. Abort.
You read his whole profile and still swipe right.
I know!
Alright, I'll go with you, but you must give me your word you will not let any harm come to this planet.
Yeah, this is our planet to fuck up.
You look away from him toward your small city.
It's literally just called Small City.
Mm-hmm. Small City. He frowns. Agreed. With that, he grabs your arm and pulls you towards his ship.
I guess we're married now.
No, we need a wedding theme version of the Dragon Ball Z theme of the Dragon Ball Z.
You both remain quiet as the ship leaves the planet and reaches a docking area light years away. When you step out, the man beside you shoves you toward a door to the right. Now, this is a bizarre option that we're being given. Because our choices say, choose a destiny, right or left.
Choose a destiny?
Mm-hmm. Right or left.
Is this a translation thing?
We were shoved towards a door to the right. So I don't know if this is like a fucking Stanley Parable thing, where we just decide to not do that.
Do we... you know what? I say we've already, you know, we've reached what we thought would be the ending condition, but at the precipice, let's just juke fate.
Okay.
Let us zig when they expect us to zag.
Oh, wow. This took me by surprise.
Uh-oh.
You are standing in his bedchambers.
Wait, what?
Oh!
Well, okay.
It has been over 5 years since you agreed to his conditions.
The fuck?
What?
How did this...
Did it work a time skip in there?
Yeah.
Do we have kids?
And you are no worse for the wear.
Cool.
That's not a great descriptor.
For a happy relationship 5 years in?
No worse for the wear.
No worse for wear.
He should be back from his mission any moment now.
Why aren't we on
Oh, Dave.
Mission?
What?
Just then, your two boys run through the automated doors.
Oh, sweet. My boys.
Mm-hmm. What are their names?
Oh, do we choose?
Mm-mm. Two Saiyan boys.
That tells us a lot about the author of this story, frankly.
Okay.
Spaghetti squash and zucchini.
I was gonna say one of them needs to be Vegeta because Vegeta's dad's name was Vegeta
for lineage.
Oh. Yes,
for lineage. Right. So he needs to keep the blood, the royal bloodline.
So of those other two, Aaron, what were your favorite?
Spaghetti squash.
Here's my son. His name's Spaghetti.
Here's my son, Getty. Mommy, mommy, they run toward you, hugging your waist. Will you read us a bedtime story again, please? So I guess the first one didn't work. Didn't take.
They're too powerful.
Because they're back up again.
Oh, those two. They're just so high energy, you know?
You smile down at the two dark-haired boys with their adorable smiles and furry tails.
Receding hairlines at 4 years old.
Mother, do tell me about the three pigs and their hubris.
Let me take those lines again. I forgot. Mommy, mommy! Will you read us a bedtime story again, please?
How old is... Oh, I guess they can't be older than 4 or so years old.
Mm-hmm. My name is Jita. I am 4 and a half. You know the deal. 1 per night. Now go to bed, and when you wake up, your father will be home. Hurry off now. The sooner you get to sleep, the faster you'll be able to see him again.
And if I tell him you've been up, he'll kick your ass.
He'll blow up your planet. The boys run off to their room, and a few minutes later, their father walks through the door. You rush over to him.
Suit. Tie.
You rush over to him, kissing him as if your life depends on it. It's a weird way to describe that.
That is very weird.
I hope it doesn't.
I mean...
Yes, my queen, I'm home.
Oh,
nice.
Jesus. Oh, bejesus.
Also, oh, bejesus.
I don't know. He knows how to make a woman feel valued. I'm starting to see how this worked out.
He kisses you again and clicks the lights out.
Oh.
Vegeta moves fast.
Clearly.
He's done a lot of speed training.
So, the end. Try again at chapter 1.
Yay. What? I mean...
What happened if we went the other way?
Who the hell knows?
Yeah, what the... What?
I guess we'll never know.
No way to tell.
The life is just
how destiny works.
A destiny of intergalactic domesticity?
Hey, actually, I changed my mind. Can I read you one sentence of one of the other endings?
Good.
Just so you get a taste of what could have been.
I'm terrified, but yes, do it.
You sit in your living room with 3 bowls of cereal, 6 empty boxes of Frosted Flakes, 3 jugs of milk, 18 banana peels, and a few huge empty raisin boxes.
What? What? I'm sorry?
We could have had life. We could have been paradise.
It could have been ours.
We could have unlocked the serial ending.
If we had only gone right.
Was that the right...
What?
If we went through the right door? We would have
I don't know. Cereal? I just clicked at random.
Oh. We could have unlocked serial percent.
Still, that means there is a set of choices that leads to that.
Yeah, somehow.
This life of Madame Acorn's Crush rules. She lives a well-fulfilled life.
Holy shit.
Well, so ends the life of Queen Acorn Squash.
Madame Queen Acorn
Madame
Squash,
Queen. Right.
Please.
She would not leave that Madame behind.
Mm-hmm.
No. Are you guys ready to talk about the real episodes of Dragon Ball Z?
Those weren't the real episodes?
Fan fiction fluff. On this show, every week we watch 3 episodes of the hit anime Dragon Ball Z. This week we're covering episodes 61, 62, and 63. The English title of episode 61 is Hidden Power.
The Japanese title roughly translates to The Great Battle Approaches. Ginyu Special Squad takes the stage.
That's one of the better titles so far.
The episode begins with Krillin still really hoping that getting Gohan powered up is the key to taking down Vegeta. He's putting all of his eggs in that basket. Goku did 10,000 one-handed push-ups at 100 times gravity, and whenever he says these numbers now, I put them in quotes. I cannot believe that he's taking an accurate count.
It's not that you don't believe he could do it, it's that you don't believe he could count that high.
Correct.
Right.
Well, because we always cut over him to him going like 9,999, 10,000.
Yeah, it's like the camera, and by extension, the audience is a cute girl that Goku's trying to impress.
Mm-hmm. If Goku had any concept of that.
Right.
It's like, yeah, just did 1,000,000 pull-ups, no big deal.
For all we know, he could have done more than that.
Yeah.
Just like repeated a couple hundreds by accident because he got distracted.
He just lost count.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The machine evidently doesn't go any higher. So Goku decides, I'm done. I'm as ready as I'm gonna be. Time to get used to regular gravity again.
He turns it down, throws a rock, and catches it, and breaks it. Which, I'm pretty sure it was something he could do already.
Mm-hmm. Not a great test. Doesn't provide us, the audience, with a terrible amount of information. But he seems happy with it.
He's very happy, in fact.
Yeah, he feels weightless now.
His physical strength has apparently increased to the point that he can perform purely cranium-based locomotion.
You mean bouncing around on his rubber hair?
Yes.
I wonder
he got
if he's
so strong,
little...
hair turned into rubber.
I wonder if he's a little lightheaded, if, like, less gravity means the air is less dense.
I mean,
not getting
it probably
as much
doesn't
oxygen.
Help. Goku gets a little relaxation montage, takes a bath.
Self-care.
Digs around in the fridge for something to drink, and we get a weird PSA about not drinking beer.
Oh, man, and I love the reasoning for it. He's just like, that's no good.
It's too...
But wait, I'll have a sport drink.
Yummy sports drink.
It's less filling.
And it tastes great.
And it tastes great.
Both of those were supermarket brand, weren't they?
Yeah, I loved that can.
I mean, yes, they both just said beer and sports drink on them.
Sports drink, reminding the audience that Goku is straight edge for life.
Oh, no, you know what it is? It's that there's only one brand of anything on Earth, and they're all made by Dr. Briefs.
Oh, yeah, so all of Earth's commodities is the Great Value brand sport drink.
Try our great products at Capsule Corp. We have Sport Liquid and Dad Nap.
We've got shampoo in a cute cat bottle.
Oh, wow. Wow, Tyler, that was powerful.
Here's my question to you, my question to the panel. Goku mentions that sports drink is less filling and tastes great. Why would Goku want to be less full?
I know. I wrote that down.
It is
too.
A bizarre choice.
I wanna, what was the Japanese version of that moment like?
I'm going to chalk it up to him being lightheaded. I'm with Aaron. Mm-hmm. He's not in his right mind.
Well, see, now, this is the only situation, the one singular situation where I would say, well, how is that any different from how he is normally? But no, this is genuinely anomalous and concerning.
Yes.
I am
concerning behavior from Son Goku.
Goku, are you all right?
Krillin and Gohan have just about reached Guru's place when they finally realize that they were being followed by Vegeta. Krillin tells Gohan to go on ahead while he holds off Vegeta.
Krillin turning around and facing death itself.
Honestly impressive for him, considering all of his inaction up until this point.
Maybe he's a little self-assured now that he got that power boost from
from the old Boost Rooney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was very excited about
it. Confidence he needed.
Vegeta blasts up right into his face, and he starts mocking Krillin, and he holds up his middle finger for way too long.
Emphatically, just sort of like...
He's just holding it while they're conversing.
He's not even saying anything that would be taunting. Like,
no.
I believe this is one of your Earth signals.
He's not so much flipping the bird as letting it rest gently.
I would like one Dragon Ball, please. I would like the one you have in your possession.
This is the longest finger, so it tells you how much I want the Dragon Ball.
It denotes importance, you see. If I was holding up a pinky, it means I would want one small token, like some pocket change or a sports drink.
Do you have any smaller Dragon Balls? These are hurting my arms.
A little bit, yeah.
I would not hold up the finger between those two, as that would indicate I was asking for marriage. You are not a perfect mate.
You look like you would go right instead of left. What? Vegeta, what are you talking about?
He just stares wistfully into space.
Here's my...
It's just something that happened a long time ago.
I left my sweet baby boy Spaghetti. Oh, how I miss him so. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Here's my favorite part about this exchange is Vegeta has very specific demands.
Mm-hmm.
You know what those are?
Please.
Give us the Gohan. He specifically demands the Gohan before Star Ball. It.
We can't not root for him as a podcast.
That's true.
Give him the
he
Gohan.
Knows what we're about.
At the very least, we sympathize.
He's literally speaking our language.
We understand his desire for the Gohan.
Vegeta senses a big old power over at Guru's place, and he rockets off to check it out. It's Gohan getting juiced up inside.
Is that key energy I smell?
But when Vegeta gets there, he thinks Kakarot is hiding inside.
Oh my god. Vegeta dunks on himself super good.
Yeah. So this is where you've been hiding.
I've got you, Kakarot. Surely a power level that great must be my nemesis. Oh, it's a 5-year-old.
Who, well, just want to stress that. Still 5 years old.
Yes.
Still five. Five, flying, beaming. It's great.
It's all good.
Has a confirmed kill count.
Vegeta is shocked at first, but he manages to laugh it off. Saves some face. Guru warns Dende about a powerful force that's headed to Namek. And Dende warns everybody else. And Vegeta's the first one to figure it out, which is to say it's the Ginyu Force.
He does the first of many cusses in this series of episodes.
What did he say? What was his cuss?
Damn it all, it's the Ginyu Force.
See, alright, product number one. From Vegeta's perspective, this is a big assumption. He, before this, like, excursion, he's never had the ability to sense power levels. Yeah. So why does he know what the Ginyu Force feels like immediately? Like, from orbit?
I think it's just process of elimination.
Yeah, it's like, this is really big. It's not Frieza big, but it's really big, and it's off-planet.
Could it be Dodoria? No, nope. I killed him.
Yeah.
Super well, maybe good. It's Zarbon. Wait, no, got him too.
Darn. Is it my queen, Madame Acorn Squash?
Alas,
no.
It is not.
No, I could never be so fortunate.
A single tear falls on Namekian soil. Mm-hmm.
I also noted here that him floating across from Krillin gives us an incredible illustration of the fact that Vegeta is not a whole lot taller than Krillin.
Oh, that hair adds at least a foot and a half.
Vegeta tries to strike a deal with Krillin to get that last Dragon Ball because he is terrified of the Ginyu Force.
Like, really genuinely, remarkably so.
Shook enough to admit that some members of the Force may be stronger than him.
Only some.
And only may. But still.
He's not willing to give it 100%. Krillin really does not want to give up the Dragon Ball until Nail steps out and he drops a twist on us, which is that the Namekian Dragon Balls grant 3 wishes, not just
what?
1.
3 wishes?
That must be why they're so big.
To hold the wish energy in them.
I'm sorry to say that Gordy could not join us again tonight, but he did have a very good plan when he heard about the 3 wishes on the Dragon Ball, which is that Vegeta gets a wish, which is to become immortal.
Mm-hmm.
Gohan gets a wish, which is to become immortal. And then Krillin gets a wish, which is to make Vegeta not immortal.
Boom!
Good. Dunked.
Everybody wins. Krillin relents, and he guides Vegeta back to the ball, with Gohan tagging along behind.
Like, these negotiations, like, took off at, like, a rapid pace.
Oh, yeah.
I did want to...
They're ready for a knockdown, drag-out fight.
I did want to appreciate that all of Vegeta's malice towards Gohan is gone, because when Krillin suggests that they should wish for Gohan to have immortality, Vegeta doesn't throw a fit, he just gives a very simple explanation. The boy's strong, but he doesn't have the fighting experience.
It's a very simple pleasure of mine, but this is one of my favorite things in an anime, which is when two enemies very quickly stop being enemies because a bigger enemy shows up.
Oh, shit!
And this isn't particularly an incarnation of it, but I love it when this trope is used to make, you know, to like make you root for bad guys because there's even badder guys on the way. That's very fun.
I was thinking about this just as, like, this is a constant trope of Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z by extension, and it's just, it's kind of a brilliant tactic, storytelling-wise, which it breaks down to being Toriyama just has to design characters once. Like, he doesn't have to design new good guys and bad guys, he just designs a bad guy and then a badder guy, and then he's got a new good guy. Who we already care about.
Ruthlessly efficient.
Perfect.
It's very efficient. The Ginyu Force lands on Namek.
The boys are in town.
Here comes a special boy. Here comes a special boy.
Frieza says, "At last, my precious Ginyu Force has arrived, and right on schedule." Which makes me wonder if he was worrying that scheduling would be off without Zarbon.
Right. He gave them a secret hour to get there, and they landed on time.
Listen, as we're going to find out, there are a number of adjectives that we can unpack for the Ginyu Force. One of them is punctual.
All right, I gotta come in at this from a from the side.
Yeah,
by saying that
let's
I guess
flank them.
I guess landing isn't something the Frieza Force does. I guess they always just slam explosively into every place they go.
What's the point of landing if you can't make an entrance with a dust clearing?
Yeah, it's the,
you've got all that good choreography.
It's the Space Marine approach. So this is the moment. There's been a little bit of it before now, but this was the moment when I first saw this part when I was like, wait, the Abridged series didn't make this up?
Nope.
No.
Almost not at all.
Not at fucking all.
You can't make fun of a clown.
No.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I love the first look we get of the little G-Force people. Painted nails, gorgeous fluffy white mane. We've got tousled short red hair. We've got a strong blue jaw and scouter. And we've got a frog.
Does that count as foreshadowing?
Maybe.
Maybe.
And mane. Let us be real. That is a wig. It's a great
How
wig.
How dare you?
It is pinned in. It will stay in. I am admiring the craftsmanship, but that is a Wigs by Vanity if ever I have seen one on Jace.
So, several observations relating to Jace.
Yeah.
The first is that he, as he introduces himself, he appears to be having a small orgasm.
He's really into this
pose.
He's ready to go.
The second observation is that in their super dramatic, badass, like, silhouette intro, there are actually six silhouettes, the Ginyu Force and their suitcase full of scouters.
And the briefcase, yes, I love it.
The sixth member of the team.
I mean, for Frieza, that's probably as important as any of them.
True.
Gosh, I love how much their poses tell you about their character. Raccoon, takes a big breath, big pose, he is into it, but he's maybe really focused on the choreography more than performing. Birder, another big breath, but like more aggressive. I feel like he's got a better handle on the choreography. He's more into like doing the performance of being a cool fighting troop.
He's probably been on the team longer.
Yeah. Jace is Jace.
Yep.
He's got his I wrote some little hearts. He does his boy band. If this was a boy band, he'd be the one that like all the 13-year-olds have a poster of.
He's the one with the solo career afterwards.
Yes.
Well, oh, yeah.
I feel like a lot of 13-year-olds in this universe have posters of him anyway.
Oh, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people in the Frieza Force, they make a lot of money on those posters.
He poses like he's ready to leap into action or your arms. And then Goldo's pose, he does like a karate pose, but then it turns into like a sassy tiger. He's gonna get ya.
Rawr.
And then Captain Ginyu,
he just kind of shows you his butt.
He shows off his assets.
The whole butt.
He displays his best attribute.
He does a little peekaboo.
Listen, this is what pays the bills. Don't get it twisted.
Oh, I was just gonna say the group pose, flowers appear, and I just wondered like, yeah, do they sell, like, Ginyu Force calendars, do you think?
Oh, the merchandising has to be intense for this. Come on.
Oh, for sure.
You don't get a Sentai season without at least, like, 8 Megazords and 5 toy lines and 3 crossovers.
Right. Which makes it even... All of which makes it even more confusing that Frieza seems as baffled and surprised by this as anyone else.
He fucking blushes.
He is blushing. I saw that.
Has he ever worked with them before?
I've got headcanons for this that come up in next episode. I've got a whole thing.
That's what I'm into that.
So should we? We don't need to give like a primer to what these guys are meant to be representing, right? Like, the folks at home know that this is a delicious, wonderful reference to the Sentai series that started in the 70s that Akira Toriyama was just a fan of. He just likes Sentai.
I mean, who doesn't?
So, you know, like any GM, when you like Sentai a lot, you find a way to work it into whatever you're doing.
You may or may not.
That even translates to the name of the Ginyu Force in Japanese is the Ginyu Toku Sentai.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Which, that just means, like, Sentai just means, like, task force, squadron, you know, stuff like that.
Before we move on to the next episode, Aaron, I have a question specifically for you.
Oh my.
Because it was brought up last time and you were not familiar with the Ginyus yet, so you were not ready to lay out judgment. But now that you have seen the Ginyus in all of their glory, confirm or deny Hufflepuffs?
Confirm. Mm. Yes.
Confirmed.
Oh.
We got it.
Loyal. They are hard working.
This and some stuff that comes up next episode, yes. They are
above
loyal.
All else, they are hardworking.
Yes.
Any final thoughts for 61?
Yeah, I have a couple things. One thing I want to note, like, after the Z-Warriors and Vegeta... Does he count as a Z-Warrior at this point?
Sure.
Okay.
We'll lump him in.
The instant you team up.
No, the instant Goku declares that you are our friend.
Yeah, I don't know if it's this episode or next one when Goku's gazing off into the distance. He's saying, time to help my friends, and then we cut straight to Vegeta's face.
Anyway, after they leave Guru's house, like, Nail goes back inside to talk to Guru, and Nail is the first person in the entire show who seems skeptical of the idea that immortality is just a magic
is
bullet
helpful.
That solves everything. Because he's like, even if they get the Dragon Balls, I'm not going to bet them.
Yeah.
And then also, I noted that Goldo does not have a scouter, and you'd think that the army that makes armor that can stretch to fit many times the wearer's original size could make a scouter for a guy with a bunch of eyes.
They're still working on it. It's an R&D. It'll be there for his next mission, don't worry.
Right, of course. The technician said that he'd have it ready for him when he got back.
Yeah, it's 2 days from being done, Goldo. Just wait. Episode 62, the English title is New Ally, New Problem.
Am I right, folks?
Hey! Airline food!
You know what I'm talking about.
Hey! The Japanese title roughly translates to Goku on Final Approach, Smash Through Frieza's Dragnet.
Oh, God.
Wow, that makes this episode sound a lot more exciting than it is. Is he going to break through the blockade around Namek?
Yeah, that deep Area 6 Star Fox blockade.
It unfortunately got cut from the anime.
Oh, damn.
The episode begins with Frieza issuing a mission to the Ginyu Force. Get those Dragon Balls and bring in Vegeta.
A lot.
Preferably, yeah.
Yeah.
Captain Ginyu seems confused by this.
By the mission?
Yeah. Or just like, I don't know, it seems like he doesn't see why they'd be bringing in Vegeta. Like, oh, he's a good boy. He's on our team.
They haven't heard the news.
They're Hufflepuffs. They don't understand betrayal.
That he's mucking stuff up. But right.
I'm fascinated by the relationship between Frieza and the Ginyu Force.
Oh, like, I've got some thoughts on that.
Because it's, like, Frieza appears to have no time at all for their bullshit, but puts up with it because they're his best murderers, basically.
They get results.
Yeah, they get results. But
can't argue with results.
And then, like, Frieza is pretty much humorless and really doesn't, like, humor them at all with their nonsense, but Ginyu seems genuinely loyal and deferential to him.
Totally.
That's interesting. Which actually,
I think they all are.
Yeah, exactly. Which, now that I think about it, that brings me back to something that I noticed in previous episodes, which is that in several different places, mostly the narrator, but I think King Kai says it too, they refer to the Ginyu Force as Frieza's mercenaries, when it seems like they are his most trusted elite soldiers. They wear Frieza Force uniforms. They have scouters. Are they mercenaries? Are all the Frieza Force mercenaries?
Yeah, I don't know the distinction there.
Yeah, it's an
odd. They have their own logo on their suits.
Yeah, maybe it was originally their armor.
Could be.
I also can't help but notice that, I guess it's only really the horns, but they kind of have a similar color aesthetic, too, and it has me wondering if Ginyu and Frieza are the same species or, like, a related species.
All I've got to say is, when I first watched this episode, I watched it with my dad, and this exchange...
What was that like?
It was great. He, like, he hasn't watched much of the show, and he's like, oh, this is a fun show. This is pretty fun.
Good for him.
But this exchange between Captain Ginyu and Frieza, in which Frieza, like, in probably the gentlest voice I've heard Frieza use, ask, what is it, Ginyu? First name basis. And then, after being asked something, Captain Ginyu says, "As you wish, Lord Frieza." Even my dad was like, "Oh, they're in love."
Oh.
Secrets. They have definitely been together for a long time, on the, at bare minimum.
Goldo gets a flashback to explain how much he hates Vegeta, which is a lot, and how he feels insecure about being on the Ginyu Force and not quite like up to snuff for them.
Vegeta makes it clear here that like the Ginyu Force doesn't specifically refer to these five people. You are appointed to the Ginyu Force.
Yeah,
which further puzzles me as to why Frieza seems so unfamiliar with them. I guess it makes sense given some stuff we learned later that, like, Ginyu himself is the common denominator, mm-hmm. and there have been a lot of different teams.
I don't know if this is official and confirmed anywhere, or if it's just something that my brain made up as a kid, but I always assumed, at least, or maybe we find out, that Goldo is on the team because Vegeta turned down the position.
That was part of my headcanon.
Oh.
I don't know if that's official or not.
I like that.
I like that a lot. I mean, there's no way he wouldn't have qualified.
Right. I wouldn't be doing any foolish poses.
Yeah.
Would you like to hear my thoughts on this whole Ginyu Force business?
Please.
Immediately.
Okay, so the flashback was really confusing, and I had to go back and watch it a couple times. Because, like, it starts out with Goldo just calling out Vegeta for no apparent reason in the hallway. Like, he didn't even bump into him.
Just being, like, Super Saiyan racist at him.
Yeah. And then Vegeta, with the clapback, uses good rule of insults. Whatever somebody insults you with is probably their weak spot. So, taking orders and insulting their race? Look, calls him a sniveling four-eyed freak. And then Goldo says, "You've pushed me too far." And Vegeta seems really surprised that this escalated as quickly as it did. I thought this was just casual hallway conversation. And then Frieza just does like a little beam and rolls Goldo down the hallway. "Playtime is over. Come conquer a planet with me." Vegeta says, "Of course," and does a little dead likes me best bow.
"See you later. I'm going on a date with the boss."
Yeah. So my thought is, this is a long time ago, my thought is this is just after forming the Ginyu Force, that Vegeta and Goldo were in competition for the tiny spot in the choreography.
So it's size-based. I believe that.
Size-based. But Vegeta
is that why he turned it down?
Yeah, he refused to change his hair.
Oh, yeah, it would have been too big for Ginyu's requirements.
So it went to Goldo. And my thought on Ginyu was that he would have been one of the top three lieutenants, along with Zarbon and Adoria. But I bet that Ginyu had a different vision for the Frieza Force corporate culture. Peppy, focused on team building, a little bit like Mabel from Gravity Falls in Boss Mabel episode. Like,
oh my god.
All about trust falls and casual Fridays. And that between that and Frieza flirting with them, it would have been unbearable, so Zarbon and Adoria suggest Ginyu gets his own tiny army to test his organizational strategies with, and that it be extra secret and thus out of the way so they don't have to deal with his bullshit. Ginyu's over the moon, 100% into it. Frieza realizes, yeah, we'll all probably get more done this way. But so Frieza wants to go blow up a planet to clear his head, and takes Vegeta so he doesn't stir up shit. But also because, I don't know, I feel like Vegeta's probably a chill bro to go conquer planets with. Not all sassy like Zarbon, or like angry into it like Dodoria, or peppy into it like Ginyu. Just like, kill some dudes and gets on with it.
There are those friends in life where it's just the one thing that connects you as friends. Mm-hmm. Like, they're your movie friend. You just talk about movies all the time. And you don't really, like, get along as far as lifestyles go, but you really appreciate each other's movie taste. And I feel like Vegeta and Frieza have similar blowing up planet taste.
Right.
That's the thing that could bring them together. So back to present. The Ginyus are psyching themselves up for their mission with a very bizarre little pep rally, which Frieza bravely stomachs, I note.
The best Frieza face.
Oh, but before that, precious Rikum, he's concerned for his teammate Goldo, who has zoned out and seems upset. He comes in, "Hey, what's wrong? Got something in one of your eyes?" And Goldo has a bizarre response. He says, I see revenge. And Rikum's just like, oh, okay.
Okay, man.
Rikum is Goldo's life coach.
I think Captain Ginyu implemented the bloody system.
Absolutely what's happening with the Ginyu Force.
And it's between like one of the big team members and the little team members, because Jace and Birder seem to have like a good dynamic going.
Yeah,
they're in sync,
they're palsy,
with their rock, paper, scissors later, and they cheer mm-hmm. each other on, and like, yeah, Rikum several times like checks in with Goldo like, yo, you okay?
Vegeta and company arrive at the cove that he has his Dragon Balls in, but Krillin starts to second guess himself right at the last minute.
He picks a bad time to try and do a traitor on him.
Yeah, it was all the time that the Ginyu Force needed to catch up to them, because they all slammed down in front of him, and the Force is now standing between the Z-Warriors and the rest of the balls. Krillin second guesses his second guessing.
The Ginyu Force laugh maniacally at the Z-Warriors here, and their teamwork is so finely honed that they laugh in perfect unison.
I was getting some like serious chests, monstars, you know, from Space Jam vibes from them.
Yeah, like their chests fluctuating with their laughter moves in perfect sync.
By design. Goldo is itching to settle his grudge, but Krillin notes mentally, that's the one guy that Vegeta could absolutely destroy.
Rikum holds him back because, you know, they have to decide who gets to fight who, and also Frieza wants him alive. Goldo should be ashamed that Rikum had a better memory and sense of responsibility than him.
It was a moment of weakness.
It's the buddy system.
He's very angry.
You just pick up your friend by the head so they don't go, you know, messing up the mission.
That's right. Specifically why it's big team member to little team member, so that you can pick them up by the head.
Vegeta yells, go to hell, and he launches his Dragon Ball as far as he can. But
yep.
Birder is super fast, and he catches it before anyone even has time to realize that he left. Vegeta commands Krillin to destroy the last ball before the Ginyus could get it.
Is that possible?
It disappears!
We'll never find out, apparently.
Froggo got the Gohan!
Oh my god.
Hey guys.
The Gohan's too good for him.
Apparently Goldo can freeze time.
I guess that's the thing.
That's his gimmick.
And, yeah. And after he steals the ball from Krillin, he laughs in a very specific way that I associate with minor Yu-Gi-Oh! Antagonists.
Oh?
He sounds exactly like if, you know, Rex Raptor and Weevil got put through a teleporter like the Fly.
Gohan, you don't stand a ghost of a chance.
Goldo has 6 sets of Exodia in his locker back on the
way. Oh, I should have brought those with him.
I'm dying. I'm dead. I've perished.
Ginyu says he'll handle Vegeta, but the rest of the Force protests until he relents. And the Force now does some kind of 4-way rock-paper-scissors game, with Goldo and Rikum coming out as the winners.
As strong as he is, Captain Ginyu doesn't seem to be very good at conflict leadership.
Well, I mean, considering that in this universe, ability to fight is the only thing that matters in a leader, because otherwise you can't control your troops, so... Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, Ginyu's smarter than a lot of people we've met here, but...
He's just reinforcing some negative behavior. Goldo is up first. He's taking care of Gohan and Krillin. The Z-Warriors...
Rikum promises to let him have a couple punches. God bless Rikum.
Aww.
He's a good buddy. The Z-Warriors manage to surprise the Ginyu Force with their ability to power up, and Gohan and Krillin get a surprise round.
Oh, was that before
or
after?
All I have for 62.
Rikum bends down and whispers to Goldo, I think they're making some kind of plan.
I am a big fan. And I also love Krillin's like a power up catchphrase where he just shouts, let's turn up the heat.
I think they're making some kind of plan right in front of us. Wish I could hear it.
Secrets.
I do need to note, I've got 2 final notes on this episode. Mm-hmm. One, Frieza's face when the Ginyu Force does their little getting busy jig.
Yeah.
Is definitely the face of someone who just realized their crush is a complete idiot, but they're still totally into them and do not understand what is happening.
maybe more so?
Shit.
Somehow?
You're super right. They use that shot, by the way, like at least 3 or 4 times.
Yes.
Gets Why am I into this?
Why is this doing it for me?
So when Goldo gets the Gohan, Vegeta says, "So then it's true what they say." Stops there and Krillin just says, "Are you gonna tell us what they say?" Which, I feel like Krillin has heard a lot of, "Well, you know what they say about bald guys, short guys, you know, I don't know, fill in the blank." But nobody's ever told him. Because Bulma wouldn't
have
the
heart. He never gets to hear the punchline.
And Gohan wouldn't know what they're talking about.
Episode 63, the English title is Goldo's Mind Binds.
The Japanese title roughly translates to Super Magic or Trick. Mr. Goldo is getting angry.
Mr. Goldo?
Mr. Goldo.
Specifically calls out Mr. Goldo.
Mr. Goldo is my father.
Can we take a moment to appreciate Goldo's Japanese, or Goldo's name pun, rather?
Yeah, what are the name puns for these guys?
Yeah.
The gag here is that all the Genyu Force are named after dairy in weird ways.
Are these good milk boys?
I thought Birder had to be either like Burger or Frankfurter.
He's yep. Butter.
Birder is butter.
He's a good butter boy.
Yeah.
I'm so happy.
Goldo, it's like Goldo's a weird wall. Goldo's is yogurt. Because Goldo is, you gotta think of it in like the Japanese transliterated whatever. So it's like Gurudo. It's like yogurto or something.
I was thinking like yogurt.
That also works. Raccoon is cream because it's just you flip the syllables like Rikumu, like Kurimu or something. Jace, for the longest time I thought Jace was was juice, and I was wrong.
Is it
Jace
cheese?
Is cheese. Yes.
These are good milk boys.
Because it's like,
and when
the good milk boys.
When Goku is sleeping and he's taking his little nap on the ship, he's got a big bottle of milk next to him. This is just a good advertisement. Drink your milk, kids.
Oh my god! Drink your milk, kids, and you too. One day, you too can train in 100 times gravity.
The milk force.
Lactosentai.
The episode begins with Krillin and Gohan kicking things off with a Kamehameha and a Masenko. Goldo manages to freeze time before he's hit, but we learn that his power only works while he holds his breath.
It's hard to monologue while you're holding your breath.
It's true.
That seems like a really shitty gimmick, like, to have. And at the same time, if you knew that was your gimmick, wouldn't you, like,
work on your fucking lung capacity?
Lung intake, some cardio or something?
But he specifically notes that there is a Ginyu fitness club.
Uh-huh.
And considering
optional
the Ginyu
fitness
force,
club.
Which, yeah, like, I have a hard time believing that a guy like Captain Ginyu wouldn't have really intense physical fitness requirements.
Well, we just saw in the previous episode that he relents to them asking him anything. So it's definitely optional.
I guess
just the other ones are more gung-ho on it.
No, I guess he just loves them too much.
Exactly.
There's also a bowling team, so I don't know, maybe Goldo's just really good at bowling. Maybe he can get that 7-10 split.
Everyone else picked the fitness club, and Goldo's the only one on the bowling team.
Here's what's weird.
He just stops time and knocks over the pins.
I did it! I got all of them.
Oh, turkey.
Winner, chicken dinner, that's me. Goldo, best of bowling.
It's a very good Goldo impression.
Be my friend.
Sounds just like him.
It does. I did a bit of digging.
Yeah, huh?
And it turns out all the members of the Ginyu Force have weird, probably not canonical backstories. And by probably not canonical backstories, I mean they were inside the instruction book of a Super Famicom game called Dragon Ball Z Super Saiyan Densetsu.
So well, I can't think of a more canon source.
Exactly. Hey, listen, if we can use the insert on the Tree of Might
DVD. I was going to say, I actually could think of a more canon source. And it was the pamphlet from Tree of Might.
God, and apparently all the members of the Ginyu Force, their whatever their gimmick is, originated in their childhood.
Mm-hmm. Please tell me the stories of these milk boys.
I will tell you the tragic tales of these milk boys.
Oh, no, not tragic.
Actually, not really. Not for Goldo. Goldo's a little shit. So, he apparently discovered his special powers during childhood, and what happens when you discover a power like that and you're seven? You become horrible. He caused mischief, like lifting up girls' skirts and stealing whatever toys he wanted.
He doesn't deserve the Ginyu name.
No. He doesn't deserve to join this carton.
This prestigious crew.
Mm-hmm. This wonderful shelf.
Goldo tries to get the jump on them while time is frozen, but they're already not where they were when they blasted, and he has some trouble trying to find them.
Yeah, he has to study the background painting to get a clue where everyone went.
By the time that he does find them, he's already out of breath.
Oh boy.
The Z-Warriors get up in Goldo's face, and he freezes time again, gets ready to blast them, but he trips and falls right on his ass, because he sucks.
He really sucks.
Shit immediately.
Like, honestly, the Vegeta turned down the position thing honestly makes this unironically make more sense to me, because Ginyu just needed somebody to fill that slot in the choreography.
Right.
Yeah.
He's gotta be short, and he's gotta be now.
Yep.
I need a Goldo.
But despite all of this, God bless Rikum betting on his buddy.
I know. They wager a whole Choco Nut Bar over this.
Goldo can't seem to get on the offensive, because Krillin and Gohan are just too fast, too relentless.
Are just bullying him completely.
Right. He keeps having to freeze time. He has to freeze time and run away. He doesn't have a chance to get a punch in. It's at this point that the rest of the force threatens to kick Goldo off the team if he can't close the deal. He decides to bring out his trump card, which is the Mind Bind. And Krillin and Gohan are trapped in a psychic net.
But it's too late. Rikum loses his chocolate bar.
Birder wins the chocolate bet.
Yeah.
And personally, he pulls it. He doesn't even have a pocket. He just pulls it right out.
Right out of his chest plate. Oh, I saw that.
Personally, I would not eat anything that has been that close to Raccoon's body for any significant length of time.
That's gotten a little melty. There's maybe at least a few hairs in there. But you know what?
It has a wrapper. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
So this actually gets kind of interesting to me now, because Goldo does suck, but it seems to me that he could very easily not suck if he put in any effort at all to end anything. But more significantly, like, everybody writes him off, you know, by the measurement. Presumably, if you looked at the Ginyu Force through a scouter, it would say the same thing as what Krillin sensed, which is that he's the weakest member of the team. Vegeta could beat him up with one hand tied behind his back, so on and so forth. But this does not account for both of his incredibly powerful abilities, both of which are game changers, and which people with much higher power levels cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there something about this, like, psionic ability that Goldo seems to have that is, like, outside of the normal key power scale?
It's not a thing that we see many, if any, character do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He doesn't seem to be able to use beams.
Well, it seems like he tries, but then he ran out of energy like an idiot.
Like, I was thinking about shows that took a lot of inspiration from Dragon Ball Z, like as a shonen action show.
Yeah.
And a lot of them implement like magic systems where characters have sort of themes to them in their attacks and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But DBZ is kind of a level playing ground where everybody's got the beams and the punches, and they don't really have like specialized attacks, so when you do see them, it is kind of out of the ordinary.
Different flavors of beams. This beam is an orb. This beam is yellow. This beam comes out of my eyes.
Oh. When they get caught in the net, Vegeta cusses again. Damn, I told them not to do a direct attack. Even though they were doing a pretty good job of, like, going around the side. He also calls it a trap. I'm pretty sure it's just an attack.
Yeah. They fell into the old mind-bind trick again.
Krillin and Gohan start getting barraged by small rocks, which is Goldo's first attack.
Nice. Good one.
It seems more annoying than harmful.
Yeah, just kicked a lot of dust into my teeth, thanks.
Ginyu Force you. Just says, just kill them already.
Yeah, quit playing around.
They're evil, but yeah, Goldo's just a jerk.
So Goldo gets ready to finish them off by using a sharpened log to skewer them. He just creates it from a tree. And over on King Kai's planet, Piccolo can sense Gohan's in danger, like Lassie.
I wrote this really big in my notes with hearts. Piccolo knows his boy's in trouble.
His protective instinct switchboard is just all lighting up.
His distress causes a shockwave of force that ripples out and starts busting up shit. In English, King Kai refers to this as breaking wind.
Because it breaks things.
Now that's what I call breaking wind.
And now I've gotten into this habit.
Uh-huh.
You know, every time I hear a King Kai pun, I gotta double back switch over to the Japanese language on Funimation Now and see what that pun was in the original. And I like it, actually. It's pretty fun. So King Kai's eating a fun steak, and he's got like a fork and knife, and the shockwave breaks the silverware. Just like breaks the knife part out of it. And he basically says, I can't eat with this knife. And the language pun, he says, taberare naifu. Taberare nai means, like, I can't eat. And he just kind of adds a foo. He adds naifu to the end of it. And that's the basic joke.
That's the joke.
That's the joke, is a word at the end of another word. That sounds like another word. I'm all for it.
Words, baby.
Well, in English or Japanese, King Kai seems pretty disappointed that Piccolo did not laugh at his joke, despite Piccolo never laughing at any of his jokes.
That's never gonna happen, Kai. Mm-mm. You gotta let that one go.
Krillin is seconds away from being skewered when the two of them can suddenly break free of the trap. They check what's going on with Goldo, and his head rolls off of his shoulders.
What?
Turns out that Vegeta decapitated him while he was distracted. Vegeta disintegrates Goldo, gets rid of him.
But not before Goldo's attached to No Lung's head does a lot of talking. A lot of air in that tank.
Suddenly, got a lot of lung capacity.
Exactly. I appreciate that head tearing off like a rubber Halloween costume, by the way. That was oddly clean.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe this is why he has such small lung capacity. Maybe he is just the head, and he's like operating an exosuit.
The eyes on the side of his heads are actually lung.
Oh, no.
Oh, that got worse. That made it get worse.
He's like a Cloverfield monster.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't like it.
Yucky.
Krillin and Gohan thank Vegeta for saving them, and he gives them a real tsundere answer. He says he has his own reasons for wanting Goldo dead. It's not like I wanted to save you, football head.
Oh, that hit me hard.
Two sagas, 14 episodes, and 5 story arcs until you're dead.
Raccoon claims the fight with Vegeta. So Birder and Jay start having another rock, paper, scissors battle to find out who gets Krillin and Gohan.
Mm-hmm. I love these good milk boys. First of all, they are surprised that Vegeta actually killed Goldo. Like, they really believed in teamwork. Why would you kill your teammate? And then, even after Vegeta clearly refuses to play by these rules, they still believe in rock, paper, scissors, and dibs.
Jason and Birder are locked in a dead heat, and Gohan hopes that they just make themselves tired.
And you ever catch the Jason Birder movies?
I was just about to say that the way you said that. So I really need to emphasize this. This is how the episode ends.
Mm-hmm.
This is the cliffhanger.
Yep.
It's these three fuckers standing here awaiting their deaths while these two fuck up playing rock, paper, scissors.
Uh-huh.
The buddy system is too strong with these two. They're too good of buddies.
We now see the downfall of their synchronicity is that they're always going to throw the same fucking symbol.
Good old rock.
It's just punches.
You know, it's one of those things where it probably took them, like, years to figure out that scissors were a thing. They probably, for the longest time, had rock and paper down because those are the hands you make for punches and beams.
There you go.
But the idea of just extending two fingers out and it's like, so what? Do, like, two tiny beams come out of them in different directions? That seems hard to aim. No, no, they're just scissors.
And like we brought up at the beginning of the episode, there aren't any cutting implements in space.
No, they don't know what these are. Oh, no, it's... Oh, no, I get it. Here you go. It's punch beam freezer horns.
Boom!
Nailed it.
Wait, so, Beam beats punch.
Rock, paper, Frieza head.
Punch beats Frieza horns? Frieza horns beats beam.
Frieza horns beats everything. That's why they rarely use it.
Oh, fair, fair.
Out of deference.
I mean, I guess eventually maybe Goku will show us if punch can beat Frieza horn.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That maybe. Seems dubious to me.
So that's all I have for the episodes this week.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean it's time to hail Satan?
So what happened last week? Anybody want to explain themselves?
Well, we followed some animal friends.
Uh-huh.
A saber-toothed tiger and a T-Rex, a tailless T-Rex.
Uh-huh.
And we went to the underworld to seek the tutelage of a witch.
Yeah, just to learn magic.
Yeah, they learned magic from Baba.
By wearing weighted pointy hats.
You know, some may say...
Also, don't forget, they were sorted into Gryffindor. You were saying?
Yes.
Some may say, we've gotten a little off track with these segments.
Oh,
some
well,
people are dead wrong.
Fucking prove it.
Exactly.
So, was that it? Was that the point?
That's all I
okay.
got.
Okay. Okay.
What happens on Earth, my dude?
Yeah, what's going on Earth? Anybody have thoughts?
Do we have a name for the farmer? I feel like we should make one.
He's just been the farmer.
And he's kind of become like a punished venom farmer over here with a robot hand and a thirst for vengeance.
Uh-huh.
What are we feeling? He's an Eartho, you know.
Yeah.
He's not vegetable based or underwear based that we know of.
What if we could name him Bean?
I like that. What's his favorite bean, do you think? Lima?
Baked?
Well, that has connotations.
True.
Punished baked farmer.
Ooh, we could do one of those things where we name him something that raises eyebrows, but the more people, like, in, the more the fans investigate into why he would be named like that, the more they're led down the wrong way. We could just call him Senzu. Like, he was named Senzu as a child. And all the fans are going to go all over the wiki going, like, why was it? Was he related to Korin in some way? Is he a distant cousin of Yajirobe? But no, it's just a cool name their parents thought of.
A magical bean they heard of, maybe.
Yeah.
All their other kids are named, like, Soy.
Mm-hmm.
And, Peanut. No, that's not a bean. That's a nut.
I mean, we could filter in some nuts.
Yeah.
There are nut farmers.
They're a nutty family.
Ah!
Is there a fairy tale about, like, a Senzu bean stock?
Ooh.
Oh!
In this world?
And
is that where they heard about it?
And
well,
a clever cat that climbs the stock?
I was about to say, any fairy tale involving Senzu beans would have to include Korin as a character.
Right.
Automatically makes it the best fairy tale of all time.
I was about to say, isn't Korin's tower just an entire Jack and the Beanstalk myth anyway?
You're right.
Yeah.
There's beans, you have to climb a lot. There's
God
a cat.
Is at the top.
God's at the top, you know. Like in Jack and the Beanstalk.
Right. I want to figure out the specifics of this fairy tale.
Okay.
In the context of a story that Hercule would tell Videl before going to bed.
All right, sweetheart, listen up.
It would be a story about himself, right?
Yeah, he would be Jack in this case. Korin the cat, I guess, is the giant that you got to steal shit from.
Mm-hmm. So there was a bit of a ruthless person, say, gives Mart gives Mart a family cow and says sell it to market. Because
it would be a family pink bird.
Thank you. You're right.
Pink ostrich.
Pepto ostrich.
Pepto ostrich.
You need to sell this at market or get a darn job and start providing for your family, you know, all that stuff. So he goes and is instead offered some mysterious beans from a kind of a short, pudgy guy with a sword. I don't know why, he just really seemed to want that ostrich for some reason.
Okay, I'm gonna filter in a factoid.
Please.
While he's telling, because he's making this story up apparently on the spot.
Yeah.
Just from details that he's heard, And when he gets to that part, that is the part where Yajirobe is on the news telling everybody about the Z Warriors. And he's just, like, free associating the things that he sees. Pudgy samurai gave me beans.
And said, you know, these are going to help you or whatever. And said, you're now part of a secret task force dedicated to protecting life on Earth.
He said the beans were magic, but they were a trick.
It was all pyrotechnic.
So it turns out...
beans.
So Mart ate the beans entirely, and it gave him super jumping power. And he jumped into heaven and stole all of God's other beans and took them back and made a turn a huge profit on them.
He stole God's beans and a blueprint with a kick on it. It was a scroll that Mart ate, and it taught him how to kick.
But how did he?
And the kick would explode
like dynamite.
How did he steal them? Did he have to sneak into God's house in heaven?
God was not very fast. He was kind of old.
And then Mart decided that he needed a new name to encompass how cool he is.
So and better than God.
Yes. And he thought, what's the opposite of God? And also cooler. I know.
While he's telling this story to his daughter, trying to get her to go to sleep, about how many whiskeys deep is he?
Oh boy. Here's the thing. Is Mark a whiskey guy? Is Mr. Satan a whiskey guy?
He needs something strong. Just like him.
What about a sports drink?
You know, they're less filling.
And they taste great.
He's got a... Oh, God. He does.
You know, you've sold me.
He's a freshman. He's doing, like, Gatorade and vodka in a solo cup.
Gross.
Oh my God.
He just never learned how to mix anything else or better.
I'm so disappointed.
He didn't even switch it up to vitamin water.
Ugh.
Oof.
Ugh.
Terrible.
He would.
I believe you. But I'm disappointed in our boy.
You'd think after, like, getting 5 mansions and, like, a statue and saving the world twice, he'd get someone to maybe hand him a little, like a tasting menu. Maybe recommend him something. You know, you're gonna maybe want to pair a nice dessert wine with this, you know?
Before we finish off, does anybody have a snappy button to the end of that fairy tale? Like a moral or something?
Oh. Well, I mean, I think if we look at some other tangential content, we'll find that a lot of folklore doesn't really have a lot of morals.
There's an interesting perspective.
They just kind of seem to wander wherever they want.
The moral of the story, Videl, is
curious.
Don't talk to strangers. Unless they offer you a credible business opportunity.
Don't take beans from fatsos. Go to bed.
Just today, and some people will know what this means.
Uh-huh.
Just today, I finished listening to the two-parter Madame Del Noir story, The Yellow Dwarf, and...
oh, no.
Everything being said here is correct and accurate.
So now the question is, does Videl take this fairy tale into her heart, or is this just one of several weird things Dad says?
Oh, you know. She's internalized a lot of dear old Dad's total bullshit by now. She understands the game.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think Videl pretended to fall asleep about halfway through so that he would leave her room quicker so that she could read, like, detective novels.
I was going to say, she looks on a good detective novel and she falls asleep to the gentle white noise of a police radio scanner.
You're right, she flips on her flashlight and tucks into chapter 23 of The Hoverhounds of Baskerville.
The only Hercule in her life is Mr. Hercule Poirot.
It got better. Oh, my lord.
Good.
Well, that's it for Satan this week. Jason, please take it away. Let's finish this episode off.
We need a cooler. We need a breather.
Mm-hmm.
We need a horoscope is what we need. But hey, I've got the paper right here. As some of y'all know, some characters out there in the Dragon Ball world have canonical birthdays and thus have canonical zodiac signs. So what we do at the end is we pull out a little fortune for them each week to see if we can give them a little something to grow on. This week's What's Your Saying is brought to us by Vegeta. Vegeta technically does not have a canonical birthday, so we have to kind of pick a weird fake birthday that is based on his manga debut. He debuted on November 7th, so it would make him a Scorpio. So, Vegeta, here is your fortune for today. Today it's important to recognize that emotions are powerful things to recognize and honor. Don't discount your feelings. In fact, it's important that you embrace them with all of your entirety. Once you let go and settle into your true emotions, you'll find that your mind will clear and let you make conscious, rational decisions about whatever may come your way. Like kicking someone's entire head.
And this is advice for all Scorpios, yes?
That is kind of like a typical, like, that is on the docket for a Scorpio on a normal day.
Yeah, and I was going to say, like, considering the history of this segment thus far, I don't feel the need to question that at all. That's probably what it actually said, as far as I'm concerned. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Verbatim. Well, thank you all for listening again. I appreciate everyone who listens in every week. Jason, where can folks find you and your other content around the internet?
Me and my content.
Whereabouts on the internet are you slinging 10?
You can find my hashtag SEO slurry at Twitter and Tumblr. And the name for both is JCalves, JAYCALVES.
Dave, where's your 10?
Well, No, I tried to say it, and then my lips split and blood poured out of my mouth.
Oh. Yuck.
So, as if I just said the true name of a being from outside of our reality. But I can be found at Scythe, P-S-Y-T-H-E, an archive of our own, fanfictional works, which should hopefully be kicking up into more frequent updates and releases as of now.
They're yours to be had. Aaron, what would you like to promote?
I don't do much of all on the internet, but out in
the IRL,
in the meat space tents.
You beat me to it.
I am a regular performer at the Dayton Black Box Improv Comedy Theater in Dayton, Ohio. My group performs on Wednesdays at 8. But the theater has shows every Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, so come on by and have a good time. We make it up as we go.
Now, Tyler, you've been helping us promote our SEO contents.
Uh-huh.
Where can we find you?
What's your content? Where's your tent?
Where are you planting your tent?
Where do you pitch your tent?
I've pitched my tent on Folklore Mountain.
It's a good mountain.
The blood is leaking out of my ears now.
We need to hurry before Dave blacks out.
Dave might be the thing. I'm not sure. I've had my suspicions.
That was the secret tactic that they didn't know about. You just have to say shitty enough memes around the thing, and it lets out a blood-curdling screech and recoils in terror.
It's got two weaknesses, flamethrowers and puns. I have another podcast. It's called What the Folklore. We read folktales. We joke. It's a good time. Check it out on Tuesdays and Sundays.
Can confirm it is a good time.
If you would like to contact this show, you can do so on Twitter at @destructo_disc, or you can Gmail us at Gmail or at destructodiscourse@gmail.com. And please, if you would be so kind, rate and review the show on iTunes. And when you do, click the 4-star rating.
Why?
That's how we know you're a true fan.
That's what the true fans do.
Oh. Because mm-hmm.
They know that that's the Gohan. Give us the Gohan.
We humbly request that you requisition the Gohan.
Give us the Gohan.
Well, didn't we decide already that we were done asking for it nicely?
Listen, yeah. We're playing them hot and cold. We're vacillating. Good podcast or bad podcast?
Okay.
Is this the bad podcaster team?
I can't remember.
If I'm on it, yeah.
We don't remember which one to shoot.
Thank you all for listening. This has been Destructo Discourse. We will see you next week. When night never turns to day.
Don't you be afraid, go fly away.